Josh, are you there?
Sorry, I am here. I was on mute. Now we know my mute button works.
Yeah, that's
sorry
good. That happens to me a lot too, so I sympathize. Okay, I don't have any comments, so we'll go ahead and go to the first item of action, which is approval of minutes.
Move to approve.
I can second that.
Great. I've got Josh moving to approve and Emily seconding. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
So that sounds like a unanimous approval. So thanks for that. So we'll go ahead and move straight to the first item of contract, which is...
Wait, Carl, hold
yes.
on just really fast. I don't know if you had a chance to see the emails that we sent around, but I'm kind of hoping that we can prioritize a little bit. It struck me that some of these things would be extremely routine and that other things not so much.
Okay.
It's okay. I only sent this, I think, on Friday, but did you have a chance to look at that?
I have Emily's email up. Did you send... I actually don't remember you sending me one about finance committee.
Yeah, I think I can't remember if I responded to Emily's or sent a separate one, but...
let me see if I can...
I mean, I guess I'll just say really quickly.
Yeah, you can already say it, yeah.
Yeah, so some of these look really straightforward, like the like Cascade Health Solutions and Securance Consulting and trying to remember what else. I mean, maybe the Raymond Handling one as well.
Mm-hmm.
That one maybe a little less, so we'll see. But I just wanted to see if we could do those really fast. And then I just had a question kind of about what exactly is the role of the finance committee in some of these things. Just because it was hard for me to tell whether we were making like policy decisions that should go to the whole board or whether there was additional information, like sort of contextual information on the overall spending on some of these projects that we didn't have that we would want to have in order to recommend these things to the board. I think those other ones will just take a longer time. And Emily, I don't know if you want to pile on with your stuff here or if we should try to re-strategize the agenda first. What do you think?
I think that sounds good. I don't have my materials in front of me because I am driving, so whatever I wrote in my email is still the most current opinion that I have.
Okay.
Okay.
Don't rely on Carl a bit on that.
Sure, sure. And I'm amenable to doing things out of order. So sounds like, Josh, you have a preference for the first contract we want to review. So which one's the first one you'd like to look at?
If we could do Cascade Health and then Securance. I don't know if Robin is there, but she could be on deck, and we'll do the Cascade Health one first.
Once that we have one person who's going to speak. Go ahead.
Yeah, so this is Sean Walker with Legal Counsel. We're actually discussed with Polina and others before the meeting that we're going to we no longer need consideration of three of these contracts that were procured via sole source that are going to be procured in a different way that no longer need to be before your consideration, but you know, happy to discuss that. And that's the JLA public involvement contract, the Wanamaker Consulting, and the Securance Consulting contracts. Just three.
Securance totally makes sense to, well, and thank you for that, Sean. Securance totally makes sense to me. JLA and Wanamaker, I have to say, I hear that you're saying we don't need the finance committee to weigh in on them, but they did strike me as a little bit of a concern only because speak as if it were coming before the finance committee, and then Carl, you let us know how we should move forward. But what was tricky is that I felt there was insufficient information on the project as a whole for us to sort of say, you know, recommend those to the board. So I still think we kind of want to come back and revisit the way those contracts are getting stretched out. But I don't know if that's a role for the finance committee, or Carl, maybe you think it's for the budget committee, or maybe you think it's for the whole board. But let me know how you'd like to proceed.
Since they're being pulled off of the agenda, here's what I would like to do. Let's talk about the things that are on the agenda, and then if we have time, let's talk about this, the your concerns for the ones that were pulled off.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay, great. And just to make sure I have the right contracts that we're not discussing, can you, maybe you could list them by the letter, Sean.
Sure. Yeah, letter E, letter F, and letter H.
Okay, so we're keeping G in everyone else. A, B, C, D, G. Okay, great. So now that we have those, I know, sorry, Emily, you don't have it in front of your face, but we're just gonna, we're gonna take those ones off that we don't need to discuss today. Josh, did you have, which one did you want to start with?
Let's do the first one there, the Cascade Health.
Great. So is it David or someone? Oh, David, would you like to present that one to us?
So we have went out and got ended up just with a single bid because that was the only one, the only contractor that bid on it. And this is for our after hours response. So this is for whether somebody gets injured, but mainly it is for after hour drug and alcohol testing. So it's something that we have to do, and we have to be able to do that after hours. And when Phyllis went out and looked, Cascade is actually the only person that does that when she went to try to get quotes. And so we only got the single bid. They've been doing, again, Cascade has been doing this work for us for several decades now. Again, they came in for a 5-year contract at about just over $39,000.
Great. Thanks, David. Any questions for David about this contract?
I just had a quick question about the mechanics. Is this a case where we put out an RFP, but we only got one response?
Yes. So, yes, that is. And what I will say is it's actually on the agenda, and it's my error, because when I was reading the documentation, I thought that the total bid was $39,000 per year over the 5-year term, as opposed to $39,000 for the entire term.
That was my next question.
Yes.
Okay.
So we actually need to talk about this one.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that was on me.
Okay.
But we thought by the time we discovered it, the agenda was out.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
So you don't need us to approve it. This is good FYI then. Because technically we don't need to do anything with this.
And my apologies.
Since we're on this topic, I was curious, how often do we ask them for their services?
It depends. it really does depend. We have a random pool of about 260 employees.
Uh-huh.
We have to do about 130 tests per year, 50% of the pool now. Under FTA, and so it just depends. If only day shift people come up, then we only test day shift people. But if you get a graveyard person, a swing shift person, FTA requires you to go over the hours that we work.
I see.
And it can be an FTA, a finding when they do their
review. Part of it is based on random chance, whether that person, later shift is selected or not.
Yeah. So typically we probably do about... I think it's maybe 4 to 5 a month that are after hours, maybe more than that now.
Oh, okay.
So
good to know. Yeah. Okay. Great. It doesn't seem exorbitant based on what I'm hearing for the situation. Okay. Any other comments or questions for David?
None for me.
I think Josh said no too. Okay, great. Well, thanks for that information. Thanks, Colleen, for clarifying that contract. So we'll move on to the next one, which is
Cole. So this is where I should interject my question.
Yes.
So these next three,
yes,
the City Eugene Mobility on Demand Partnership, Lamar, and Ride Zero, are all kind of part of the same thing. And I guess I just, before we discuss and then I guess approve, if we go that route, I just want to understand the role of the Finance Committee here, because as I understood it, what came before the full board before was just an update. Like, we did not make any sort of motion or go in any, I guess, I mean, to my recollection, we didn't go in any specific policy direction to do this. We may, and I think people are generally pretty supportive, but it felt sort of funny to me for us to be recommending to the board, as the Finance Committee, to be recommending to the board that we approve these expenditures when the whole Mobility on Demand project is, or all those projects, are basically, I mean, they're sort of experimental. They represent some sort of policy direction and trying to sort of explore certain models. So maybe, I don't know if this is for Carl or for council or for other staff, just help me understand how I should be thinking about the Finance Committee's role, because we didn't approve something like this at the board level. It's just sort of coming before us here as big expenditures.
Go ahead, AJ.
Yes. So the Finance Committee and Camille has updated future AISs to provide further clarity. So the board is approving a contract. The project itself is already approved by this governing body. So we don't bring anything before the governing body that has not already previously been approved in either the CIP or the budget. And definitely an expenditure such as this would have already been approved, adopted in the budget. And so this project is funded in the capital fund, and it's also funded in the CIP, and it is also funded or approved when the board approved the STIF projects. So there's a few times that the project is brought before the board for approval, and then staff then takes that direction and determines if, you know, how to actually implement it. So this phase is really just a contract to operate that project.
Great. Did that answer your question, Josh?
Yeah, that's super helpful. Sorry, I was on mute. That's super helpful. Then under Lamar, should it say stiff funding under there too? I noticed it did under, as a source of funds, it does under Ride Zero, for example, but it doesn't under Lamar. But is that all under the same basket, or is it separate? Am I mixing these up?
Yes, that is separate. So Lamar is a revenue contract, so that is actually revenue coming to the board, to the district.
I'm getting confused. Okay, that's super helpful.
Yeah.
And then the same. Okay, so then it's for the IGA with the City of Eugene. That is listed there as getting stiff funding. So that's helpful. Okay. Okay, that's great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's where we talk about these projects at one level in the stiff setting, and then here it's like it's very specific. So I just wanted to make sure we're doing our job.
So then, and that's where Camille said she'll, you know, these documents had been prepared in ahead of her being able to have updated the request. But the main thing is nothing can come before this advisory committee that has not already been approved by the full board in some format and is within the budget limitations. And so this is kind of the follow-up actions and how those contracts get awarded. At one point, just historically, Josh, we actually submitted the entire contract and all documentations to this committee and to the board, and we were asked to no longer include those documents because really then you're reading more documents than you really need to, and then you don't know what you should be focusing on. So the board asked us to kind of develop an AIS that answered their key questions. So anytime you provide us any feedback, what we do is we know that those are the types of questions this committee has, and we add that to the AIS. But all these documents are available.
But I want to say, like, I don't think this is a problem with the AIS. I think the AIS is fine. I think this is, I am still trying to understand exactly what my responsibility as a Finance Committee member. So, the form is fine. It was my brain that's broken. Hopefully now it's fixed and we can move on.
Okay. So I think that kind of provides an umbrella, hopefully, for you, Josh. And then why don't we go ahead and do it one by one? So we'll go back to
go for it.
Yeah, we'll go back to the first contract with the IGA. And who's presenting that? Is it Colleen? Oh,
I can. Yeah, Mark, so this is the IJ between the city of Eugene, Lane Transit District, LCOG, and the county. And the reason it comes for you is because it's over $150,000, even though it's only $100,000 of ARM money. It's $75,000 of city and $75,000 of county, and then in-kind for LCOG. So it just sets up the structure for funding and overseeing the MOD project downtown.
Great. And Emily, I can ask your question, but you might remember it, though. Did you?
Sure. Yes, I heard a pretty clear concern from the board about branding, especially in light of our recent marketing consultant conversation. And I wanted to just follow up and find out what that is going to look like in the community.
So we've we branded them. I think I gave you a draft at the last meeting, and we've revised that some so LTD is more prominently, displayed on the vehicle itself, and then the partner logos are kind of off to the side. So,
the other thing is, I believe this concern also came up at the board meeting at the June one, where we received a presentation from Pat and Teresa, and we first discussed kind of what the logo would look like, and board members expressed that it did not look consistent with kind of the other LTD brand, and staff followed up with a few of the board members to assure them that this is the 1 year pilot brand to make them go live. The vehicles just arrived, and the comms analysis was kind of released in June. So there was not enough time to synchronize those two things, and because of that, you'll see it's a very simple logo. It's not fully branded. It's just enough to give it vehicle recognition, and then as the 1 year pilot continues, and we determine the direction that this service would take, staff would then develop this branding all consistent with the all new look. So that was one of the pieces that they need to do. But they did know that they needed to go with this quick, fast, be visible type of brand. And there was a lot more focus put on the name. We knew the name would be harder to change than anything else. And so they focused on that and did the simplest branding they can do just to get it out.
If I could follow up to Emily's question, I know that there was interest in getting going fast, but I think for future projects that there would be some emphasis on keeping the branding close to LTD as possible, just because it, as we've heard from previous presentations and from the most current consultant, I'm worried that it would just continue to add to the already building confusion about what belongs to LTD and what not. Is it? I bet if we poll people right now, there'd still be a lot of confusion about all these LTD services, whether they belong to LTD or not.
And I think that we. It's going to be a cleaner, one standardized, more what you saw in that presentation look in the future. The nice thing about it is marketing now has the time to really look at the type of services and really provide us a unified look. And that report is scheduled. The consultant and staff are working on some final pieces, but the final one is scheduled to come before the board in September for approval. But in the meantime, yeah, that's the direction we're going in, a standard branding.
Cool. Emily, did you want to follow up on that?
Sorry, I think I understood all of that. So just to clarify, it's not going to be LTD branded until September, and then there's an opportunity to revisit. Is that what you said?
It's lightly branded. It has a big M-go. It's green like the MX bus, but it doesn't have the prominent look of LTD. It has a big M-go, and some other features, but staff has not gone through the process of making this standardized to what all of our service should look like.
I don't totally get that. It says LTD on it or not?
Yes.
Yes, it says LTD.
But you're saying it's like a tiny little LTD, so it's easy to miss?
The biggest thing you see on it, Carl and I were looking at it from my office, we can read MGO. That's the main thing. The LTD branding is not the most prominent branding on this vehicle. The most prominent name from a distance, you will be able to see a small black vehicle, a six-door vehicle with a green MGO, EM-GO mark. Is it a dash?
EM and the cord, electrical cord.
Or electrical cord, sorry. Electrical cord and then a go.
And then underneath it says, go easy, go something, and go LTD. And so, and those are the most prominent logo. And then we also have our logo in with the other partner logos. And then on the very back of the vehicle, we have our ltd.org/MGO sign on the back window.
So, Carl, just another comment.
Sure, go ahead, Josh.
I'm desperate to learn something from this unfortunate episode. I'm super excited about the pilot, but I'm slightly incredulous that we're doing this. AJ, I understand that maybe from your perspective, the most recent comms analysis and this project didn't align, but we heard this concern about brand chaos from the, as I mentioned in the last board meeting, maybe a couple times in the last three board meetings. We've heard about this brand chaos since 2015 when Bell and Funk did their work. So I think this is, I don't know, people, you help me interpret this, but I think this is what happens when you don't have a strategic plan guiding a chunk of work, is that things end up being disconnected, and the sort of the key insights that you've taken away from, previous, high quality consultant work just doesn't get represented the insights don't get represented in current work. But this is not just about the most recent comms analysis. I think it's really important for us to say that we're missing something that we heard years ago. So I get it if we have to sort of move ahead and get it done. And, the fact that we don't have LTD and foot-high letters on the thing shouldn't be a reason to postpone the launch, I think. But I guess I just want us to learn from this and realize that we got to do, to figure out, what is the planning or, that we need to do to avoid this sort of thing in the future in other realms, not just with logos, but in other realms too.
Yeah, and Josh, although that, and I believe that report you're referencing was either late 2014, early 2015, that had not been an interest of the board, but I think in the last 6 months, I've heard that that's a strong interest of the board, and we are moving in that direction because of that. And fortunately, the wheels were in motion that we had hired the consultant at the end of last year. So we've been able to kind of move in that direction, but these projects were already in motion. And so we either had to stop some projects, and I think you've stated, we want to move forward with these projects that we have funding for. So we've kind of pushed forward with the projects, even though they're not aligning with the new direction that we wanted. It just, I'm excited about this new way of doing it. And I think it's going to be much more cohesive and much more, makes so much more sense.
And AJ, Emily, no. Go ahead, Emily, and I'll talk after you.
Okay, thanks. I was going to say, point of clarification. So when can we expect it to be rebranded? Is it a month? Is it a year? Is it never going to happen? I need some clarity before I can get on board, I feel like.
This project is a pilot. There'll be a lot of decisions made about this project as we're going. I would say we can rebrand it in a month, we can rebrand it in a 6 months, we can rebrand it at the end of the pilot. But I would say, the key focus of us, what we'll be focused is on the ridership. Like the data collection that these the technology can do is really been our focus. The sooner we start collecting data, the sooner we can determine and advise the board as to the future of this service, so that we can invest the dollars in branding it in the direction that we're going in. We want to make sure we brand it in the direction the board gives us direction on. So it's considered a one-year pilot, but we can make decisions well in advance of that 1 year. It's kind of what we're doing right now with the Cottage Grove pilot. Pilot is not a decision, it is a testing. And typically we would spend the same dollars hiring a consultant to do a mock analysis, or we can kind of invest like we are now. So it's about the same dollars. We would not have saved any dollars by having this done in like a virtual reality, or us having it do in a real. The benefit of having it done in a real, once the board gives us direction, we already have the equipment and real good data. So that really was going to be probably our focus the next 6 months. But we can start changing the branding if that's a direction the board would like to go.
Can I? I want to share with my other committee members what my thinking is on this issue, which is that. So I'll start from the beginning. I do think that we've been all aware that we have a branding issue, and while it maybe wasn't as emphasized by the previous board leadership, definitely it is a focus of interest now. And I hear AJ acknowledging that and making sure to take that into account. That being said, I mean, I think when you look at what's on these vehicles right now, it's not so much that it doesn't say LTD, it's just that it doesn't visually look like it is associated with LTD, even though it has the words on it. And I think that's a room for improvement. And that's why I was trying to, maybe I was being a little bit too delicate when I was saying earlier, it's like, hey, did we learn a lesson here? Let's make sure not to do that again. So I'm gonna say that more bluntly. Hey, I think it sounds like all three of us agree that is not the way we want it to go. Let's make sure we learn from this and make sure it doesn't happen again. Because, and as AJ said, not just we three, all the board members are very interested in making sure that we correct this. It's not so much it's not a deal breaker issue. I think we need to proceed with this no matter what, because it's not the most important part, but we should learn from this so that in the future, whether it's mobility on demand or some other project we have, they need to all look like they are coming from the same source, which is LTD. I don't know if that helped anyone.
Yeah, Carl, I think that's really well put. I think it's really important for someone from the finance committee to present that set of concerns at the board meeting. Otherwise, I fear our fellow board members will think we didn't listen to the previous conversations. So, but I think as long as we sort of, carve out the time to do that, make sure that when this comes before, I don't know if it appears in the AIS or you just sort of say in the intro, but I think that's great. And that was exactly the spirit of my comment. I just want to sort of learn from this and put the right sort of structures in place to do better in the future.
Cool. Anything you want to add, Emily?
Well, I'm probably going to vote nay on this just because I feel like we're supposed to represent the rest of the board's consideration on this, but I'm fine if it passes as long as we have that conversation at the board level.
No, I concur.
I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in general, but I understand where it came from and what the priority is, so I'm not entirely opposed.
No, I appreciate that. Now, and I concur with you. We should make sure that the entire board is recognizes the conversation we had about this today, and also the implications for the future. Great. If there are no further comments, I will entertain a motion.
I do have to make one more comment because I just want to piggyback on something AJ said. I completely agree. Having a real pilot with real data is always going to be preferable to some consultant's judgment and model and guesswork about what there might be demand for. But I think one of the lessons we're learning in the transportation space, especially when people frame it as mobility as a service and start thinking very multimodally, is that people are not just attracted to the physical option. They are attracted to platforms, and they make decisions based on multiple options being available in a platform. This is why Uber has been so successful with jump bikes in San Francisco and now in other cities around the world, is that people can do it in the Uber app, right? So it's like, it's the idea of multiple services under an umbrella. And so the branding, which, you know, in some ways is totally superficial and I don't care about it at all, might be consequential for understanding other people, you know, potential riders' view of us and our services. So I guess there's something here where it seems superficial, but it might actually be substantive down the road, especially as we move toward, you know, a more electronic platform, you know, rolling out the touch pass. I mean, I think we have to take those things seriously. And it isn't just about, like, the physical reality of the services we offer, but it's also about how these things are conveniently connected, and that includes, like, in people's brains. So I'll leave that there, and I'm sure we'll circle back to this over time.
Great. Thanks, Josh. Would you like to make a motion?
Let's see.
All right.
I don't know. Where's the board? Where's the packet here? I moved to forward IGA 2019-41 to the Board of Directors for the recommendation for approval.
I will second that motion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
And all those again, same sign?
Nay.
Great. So Josh made the motion. I seconded it. Josh and I voted for, and Emily voted against. And it passes 2-1. Great. Thanks for that discussion. I know that one was not easy. Let's move on to the Lamar Transit contract. And is this Kalina? Oh, and I have to note, because you can't see this, but she is an adorable toddler with her, and she's not a bother at all. I know you had this worried mom look on your face, like she's bothering people. She's not bothering anyone.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So we're actually, Lamar, this contract with Lamar Transit is a revenue contract. However, in discussions with Kristen and Sean, because of the wording of our policy that states that any contract with a value of $149,999 comes to the board, and we didn't specify whether that's one that we made an expenditure or whether that's revenue, we just thought it was safest to bring it before the board for transparency's sake. Before we submitted it to AJ for signature. This is the contract for the selling of advertising on our buses. One thing that we have added to this particular contract is to assist with the rebranding of our entire fleet so that our fleet is consistent with what's come out of the communications analysis. And for the first year of the contract, we would receive $400,000 as our minimum annual guarantee. And then anything that Lamar receives above that, we would receive 60% of the revenue share on that. The contract is for 7 years. Typically what happens is Lamar, because of their financial standing, they are able to pay us the minimum annual guarantee up front. And then we do a true up at the end of the year to reconcile what was actually sold in and above the minimum annual guarantee.
Great, thank you. And Emily, I know you have a question, but I know it's not in front of you. So do you want me to ask or do you remember it?
Nope, I remember. So this is awesome. I love that we have some revenue sources and that we're thinking about our communications and branding campaign. So thanks for saying that. I appreciate it. My biggest question was, is this kind of standard for this industry? I felt like the percentages were kind of lower than I expected or maybe not in our favor as I anticipated that it would be. So could you speak a little bit more on that part and just help us understand the background?
So Emily, advertisement is based on what they call impressions, and the quality of those impressions. Impressions are basically how many people are going to see it, how many times a day, what neighborhoods, and what's the market. So although, you know, if you're in Los Angeles, you probably could sell a full bus wrap for about $1 million and get one about every 3 weeks. We would not have that level of market here. So it really is based on your location, your routes, where they travel. Our biggest market that was identified is the university. That's the key market that was identified as our prime market. And interesting enough, we don't get a lot of companies that advertise to our students. So so basically, you know, sometimes our advertising and our revenues don't line up very well just based on who's willing to come and advertise here. What I will say, comparing LTD's prior year's contract, LTD only received 40% and the contractor received 60%. So this contract reflects now the opposite. LTD gets the bigger share and the contractor gets the smaller share. It also reflects an increase from prior year's contracts for the minimum guarantee. So, and it also requires the contractor to assist us in the rebranding of our vehicles, which was also not their job before. And of course, it's a slow ramp. There's a lot of logistics in buses and decals, but it at least is a movement in the right direction. And I think prior to exercising all the 7 years, I think that this board will probably want to have more discussions about that. So there are cancellation clauses that always are favorable to the district. So we're not bound by this for 7 years. It just provides us the option of being able to keep this contract for 7 years. So it's, when you talk about the market, it's like the Portland market would be completely different than here. The Salem market would be completely different than here. It's just what your market tolerates.
So Emily, do you have a follow-up or can I ask something?
No, go ahead.
So you started to address a concern that I had about the, AJ, the length of the contract. Say a little more about what we are bound to and not bound to for 7 years, because I was going to say, in the absence of that strategic guidance decided on at the sort of communications and branding level, a 7-year contract seems awfully long. Say a little bit about the flexibility.
In this situation, what we saw was the fact that there is not a lot of competition in our area. That was a finding. So LTD has been with Lamar for many years. I don't know if anybody here knows the, how many years, but it's been...
it's more than 10.
More than 10 years. Yeah. And what our consultant, Celtis, advised us was that the contract was not favorable to the district. That to be able to bring in a larger advertising firm, they would have to have a certainty that they could be willing to relocate a business here. So they said, remember, LTD can always back out of it if it's not convenient for the district, but you have to incentivize competition. And no Portland contractor or out-of-state contractor is gonna come to Eugene for a 3-year contract. So incentivize it by a 7-year contract. And if that doesn't suit your needs, you, of course, only exercise that, those years that you feel are convenient. So the 7 years was an incentive to open competitions. We did have a lot of interest because of the 7 years. How many vendors did show up, Kalina?
We had 7 vendors.
7 vendors for the first time in 10 years showed interest in being our advertising firm. Ultimately, they did their research, and only Lamar bid. So what we know is we probably have the best contract that the market will tolerate when you have 7 vendors interested because of the 7 years, but you only have your local firm bid. So that also speaks to the fact that we at least were able to test the market through this process.
Go ahead, Kalina.
Also, when we did the single bid analysis, meaning once when we receive only one bid for a contract, we always contact those vendors that were interested to find out why they did not bid. And of the two that were truly interested, they did not believe that they could meet the minimum annual guarantee which is something that Lamar has committed to paying us up front annually. And so that was an issue as well.
And I think it's not the $400,000 for the first year, it's up to the $400,000. I think like year one, it's a buildup to that. So even with that minor, that buildup to $400,000, those other firms were not confident that they could meet that profit margin to be able to pay LTD that. So we do feel this is the most competitive contract we could bring before the board and that we put out there.
That is all super helpful context. I feel like maybe a little more of this, well, I don't know. I was going to say I wish a little more of it had been in the AIS, but that's only because I'm a newbie and I have not seen this type of contract before. I had similar questions to Emily. AJ, you didn't quite address, unless I missed it, my questions about the flexibility. Just say more about you made it sound like we could kind of opt out at any time. What's the meaning of the 7-year contract in that case?
I'll have Colleen. Well, I mentioned why we did the 7 years for the to incentivize competition, but all of our contracts have a language that allow LTD to cancel for convenience. And the period that LTD is normally, is it 30 days or contracts have different days?
It typically depends. I think with this one, they actually negotiated 120 days notice so that they could ramp down. And that makes sense just in terms of closing out contracts, removal of advertising on the buses, that kind of thing, because we do state the condition in which they have to leave the buses at the end of the contract.
So does that make sense to you that the negotiated cancellation for convenience here would be 100? Yeah, 120. And
That makes sense. I mean, it would, giving them less than 4 months notice seems a little cruel. I guess I was just trying to understand why, what the meaning of the 7 years is then. It sounds like we could decide to end this contract with, 120 days notice and do something different if that sort of fit our strategic direction.
And that's standard in most of LTD's contracts, just so you know. If at any point the district changed direction on any particular project, we would go back to that contract, regardless of the length of that contract, and be able to move direction. Typically, the contract is to show the intent of the direction of the project that is going in, and the contractor accepts the terms of those cancellation terms, understanding. Sure. Yeah, so they take a risk as much as the district takes a risk.
Yeah. Okay. And then my other question was really about the number of bids we got, or sort of the interest. And when you guys say interest, you mean people like showed up to a... We had 7 vendors at a pre-bid meeting. Is that what you mean?
That's correct.
Okay. So I guess I want to push on this narrative about how we did the 7 years in order to get competition. Because ultimately, if we only got one response, then we didn't really get competition. I'm wondering if I'm not understanding that right. Or, I guess I just want to understand, how would we get more people to bid? Because typically, the real competition is when you can attract multiple bids that sort of give you some benchmarks of what people are willing to do in the marketplace. I guess that this is where I'm sort of lapsing back to Emily's concerns.
So we could have incentivized more competition by reducing LTD share. We could have probably had 7 companies bid if LTD would have taken about only $200,000.
So they didn't come up with that number. That was in the RFP.
That was our... Okay. So that was the advice of our consultant who have expertise in this area and are working to assist us, and said that based on their evaluation of our fleet and the market here, that they thought that we should be able to get a minimum of $400,000. But that we
and
could
I,
not,
and
yeah.
I guess they and they were right.
They were right. Yes, they were right on that. So they were right, but all 7 of them would probably have bid had we gone down to 200, but that would not have been advantageous to the district. So we actually did get the only company that was willing to meet that. So that definitely did incentivize a competitive bid, because Lamar, you know, they're a good company, but they wouldn't have just thrown $400,000 at us out of the kindness of their heart. So we do have the most competitive contract.
Okay. That's very helpful.
I'd like to also add, because there were at the pre-bid meeting seven other vendors, Lamar increased their bid to us is 15% higher than what they've provided to us, at least the MAG is, in the past with their previous contracts. So there was an increase to the district in that regard.
Thank you. That was going to be my question. Perfect.
Great. Well, I just want to say I feel like the staff has done their due diligence and got the best deal possible, as far as I can see.
Yeah, I think the lesson is that we need to invite a bunch of people to the pre-bid meeting next time and make everybody think there are a lot of people at the pre-bid meeting.
Were there any other comments or questions? If not, I will entertain a motion.
No further questions?
Emily, go ahead.
None for me.
Go ahead. Okay, none for Emily. Josh, I think
well, then I move to forward contract number 2019-17 to the Board of Directors with the recommendation for approval.
I'll second that.
Great. So moved by Josh, seconded by Emily. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay, the motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much for that discussion. We're going to move on to...
Just really, really, I just want to say we should also make sure we say just a couple of things, a couple of points from this discussion at the board. I predict there's at least one board member, maybe two, who would ask similar kinds of questions to the ones we did. So let's just be prepared to point out the discussion we had.
Okay. Great. Move on to the Ride Zero contract.
Yeah, it's a contract for the vendor to provide the operations for the mobility on demand services in Eugene. And again, it's it's over $150,000, $100,000 of operating funds from LTD, $75,000 from City of Eugene, and $75,000 from Lane County. So it's just to provide operations of the mobility on demand service.
And just to add, our ask is, because this is a sole source, because it is a pilot project, we're asking the board to adopt the findings of fact as well as to authorize the general manager to enter into contract with Ride Zero.
Excellent. Okay. Any questions or comments?
I guess I would just say, Emily, just to channel you, I share general concerns about sole source contracts because I think it's our job on the Finance Committee to be skeptical of them. But it's a brave new world of mobility as a service. And so I think a 12-month pilot that is under all the scrutiny that it's under, I think this is the situation to kind of, get it done. And I believe you guys have done your homework, and it certainly shows it, everywhere that you've talked about the mobility on demand or mobility as a service project. So I think I'm good with it.
Great. Emily, do you want to chime in?
Carl, if I didn't email anything about that one, then I'm okay with this as well.
No, you did, but you did have a concern about, in general, sole source stuff. So, but nothing about this specific one. Great.
Okay.
I will entertain a motion.
Sorry, I am being slow. Okay, I moved forward contract number 2019-78 to the Board of Directors with a recommendation for approval.
And I'll second it.
Excellent. It's been moved and by Josh, seconded by Emily. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
And it passes unanimously. All right. Now, if I know where I'm at, are we at G now?
G.
I think we are. Okay. So yeah. Raymond Handling. And who is presenting on that?
G. That's for G for Raymond Handling Concepts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is because this contract went over $150,000 because we're buying a accessible mobility on demand vehicle. And originally when we were looking at, they didn't really provide one that was adequate to meet our needs. So I worked with the manufacturer, and now they are able to build one that meets our needs. And so since we think it's important that our services are accessible to all, we decided to go ahead and buy an accessible vehicle for the service.
Great. Any questions? Comments?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute.
Okay.
So this was, I apologize if this showed up. Was this in the CIP or just in STIF? I mean, it says vehicles will be purchased with STIF, which require no match. Did this appear elsewhere? I mean, just so we can start connecting these things?
Does anyone know?
That would be in the CIP. Yes, and this would be approved in the budget. Is that your question? Was it approved?
I'm just trying to, I mean, you had some very helpful comments at the beginning, AJ, about how different documents and decisions relate, and I was just trying to make sure that I was understanding where else this one would have been. But
yes, it would have been in the CIP and it would have been in the budget. Yes. So the board in May also when they approved the operating budget, they also approved the capital fund. And fortunately, we had already submitted the STIF projects. If you recall that STIF committee convened in April. But the formula dollars were done in, I think, January or February. So we were able to roll those dollars right into the budget. So these are approved documents. So it would have been in the capital fund. It would have been in the budget. And now it's coming before you for approval of the actual purchase award to the bus manufacturer or vehicle manufacturer.
So on that, and I apologize, I was focused on other things, I think, on the STIF funding, like the sort of the fair discounts for nonprofits and the youth pass, and then a little bit on our pitch for new buses. Was this in there specifically? I mean, as this type of vehicle, I mean, or is there some flexibility in the STIF funding?
No, it would. Okay, so in the CIP, you would have seen it in an aggregate. So, like, you would have seen, like, you know, paratransit vehicles, and then you would see, like, a large number, you know, so it might cover four or five vehicles. In the STIF funding, you would have actually seen it specifically. Yes, everything is broken down in the STIF funding specifically. And then in the capital fund, you would also have seen it specifically.
Got it. Okay, yes. That's helpful. Thank
yes.
you.
So the good news is we knew about the STIF funding, so we were able to program all STIF funding because we were actually able to start spending on it as of July 1st of 2018, but most of our projects, we knew we would not start them, except for MOD in Cottage Grove. All projects were scheduled for us to start on July 1st of 2019. So that's why you see them all coming before you now.
Got it.
I have a question about what these vehicles actually look like. Is this like a single person vehicle? Like you just, it can.
These? No, they're yeah. the ones out there.
Oh, those are person. Those vehicles. Oh, I thought it was yeah. a separate vehicle.
No, they're okay. six. No, the same vehicle is just okay. an accessible one. So they're just adding an accessible vehicle to the
fleet. Just one version of this
Correct.
One. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for that clarification. I thought it was something completely separate.
Yeah, no reason it came to you because it was only, uh-huh. it was around $120,000. Originally for the three vehicles,
okay,
but because we're adding the accessible one, it's going over $150,000 for the entire contract, so we have to come to the board to get approval
okay.
for that.
And since I know what they look like, does this like lower itself or does it put out some kind of platform?
Yeah, the platform.
Okay.
Yeah,
very good. Okay,
yeah,
great. Thank you. Any other questions or concerns or comments? I mean,
not for me.
Only if I put them in my email, otherwise, no.
Okay, great. Then I'll entertain a motion.
I move to forward contract number 2019-12 to the Board of Directors with recommendation for approval.
I'll second that.
Great. Josh has moved. Emily has seconded. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 And the motion passes unanimously. I think that's it for the contract being approved. Please let me know if I missed one. Okay. Given the time we are at right now, I think we might have a few minutes to talk about the ones that we removed from the schedule or from the agenda. If I may say, if we're concerned about sole source contracts, I'm wondering if the committee would think that this is actually a better thing to discuss as a larger board versus our committee.
Yeah, that may be right. I mean, I think Emily, I may not capture everything you were concerned about in the sole source stuff, but I'll say what I thought should come before the full board about the JLA and Wanamaker contracts. Those contracts they were basically contract extensions for, pieces of much larger contracts. But the finance committee piece was really granular and was really that we had in the packet provisionally there, was really focused on just that one piece, and there was no overall, check-in or governance of the overall expenditure on those contracts. And I can't remember us having a conversation at the board level about the total amount of money that we're spending on these big projects. And they're pretty big and go on a while. I mean, I think we're over $2 million spent on moving ahead, for example. So I just thought we should, and I know this has been a concern that Best has raised a few times in the past. I mean, just like being able to account for those dollars, even when they're not all from our local taxpayers, I think it's pretty important over time. And so I was concerned about the lack of context. But, I mean, that was really the concern.
If I may state something, a couple of years, time moves fast. It's been actually a couple of years in which the board first took on establishing standard procurement processes. And I think it is time to go back and revisit them. So at the policy level, if the board does not have a comfort with sole source and we need to make a policy change, then I think it's important that come to the full board about what those policy changes need to be. If the existing policy, procurement policy, is adequate for the board, but this committee just has maybe specific recommendations on what they would like to see, I'd like the opportunity to kind of sit down with board members either individually or collectively to talk about that, because it's really more about how I oversee the employees. They don't know to do it any different, but in accordance to the policy. And I know that maybe this committee may have had emails back and forth, but I was not involved in those emails. So at this point, I would not be able to direct staff on how this committee would like things done. But if there's an opportunity to sit down with you guys and really talk about, those things that you'd like to see that maybe are within the policy, but you just have preferences, then that provides me an opportunity to guide the staff on how they procure things. But if the board really just wants a procurement policy change, then yes, that would be best before the board, because we're actually going to change a policy. So is it preference or is it more of a policy? Preference, I would say, if we could take it offline that way. But if it's policy, then it's more appropriate for a board meeting.
Well, I should clarify that. The reason I thought it'd be good for the board is because I think it's important for the board just to understand the issue first. I don't know if the board necessarily wants to change anything in this matter. It could be a work session where we get some more education, because I think out of everyone, we three are probably the most knowledgeable in this area. But I think it's important, of just my opinion, that the entire board understands, so that they know that when we do the work, that's what these are issues we're considering. Did you or Josh or Emily, did you have any other ideas or how you want to approach this?
No, Carl, I concur with what you just stated about maybe it's just more of an understanding about why are we getting sole source contracts and what does a competitive, environment look like? And for example, what do our RFPs look like? Because I think we with Mark's contract, we got a better opportunity from them because we had more people at the table but if we put the parameters up there, maybe we would have gotten 500,000 if we had gotten into a more competitive situation. So, you know, I just want to just make sure that we're getting the best opportunity possible for LCD. The only other thing that I would say on those contracts that I had concerns about was in regards to kind of just an additional budget amount being requested for those contracts. And I just worry about our bench strength and our ability to have that full-time staff person that maybe could have been fulfilling that role on a full-time basis and building institutional knowledge rather than going out for contracts or extending contracts in this case. So just wanted to put that on the record as something that I'm probably going to be looking at in contracts. Why aren't we doing them in-house if or when possible? So just for an FYI.
Okay. Josh, anything you want to say?
I definitely agree with everything you two just said. That that if we can do more of that, that's great. And the other thing I'll try, AJ, I'll have a side conversation with you about this. You can tell me, or maybe we talk about it at a finance committee meeting, at a finance committee meeting in the future. But I would like to have some sort of governance level check-in on the way expenditures go on big contracts. It really plays into the worst, not just anti-transit, but anti-government narratives out there. If we have big contracts that then over time just get bigger, but no one's really checking on them. So I'm not saying that's happening. I'm saying when little extensions get approved, however legitimate they are, I mean, I saw the totally reasonable findings of fact in the packet. But at the same time, like, I don't want to hand people an excuse to mistrust what we're doing. So checking in on like the full scope of a project, I think is important, and sort of connecting it to the policy level objectives, which, you know, both those contracts do. So that's just the bigger challenge, and AJ, I'll talk to you and figure out where we can weave it in.
Okay. So here's, AJ, do you want to?
No, that's, okay. I totally agree.
I was going to propose, you know what, based on what I just heard, for the an upcoming finance committee meeting, why don't we do our own discussion, more in-depth discussion on that? Because one of the other problems we're dealing with right now is that the board is going to have a lot of things to talk about in the next couple of months. So maybe we do a little bit of work before we bring it to the entire board for education purposes, because it sounds like we have some stuff we want to kind of address and work out. Does that sound acceptable to everyone?
Yeah, I mean, and maybe that's a good place. I mean, in previous meetings, people had talked about the finance committee as a place where, you know, we were kind of done with a bunch of cleanups. So maybe we can get to that stuff, and we can sort of do that on behalf of the whole board.
Okay. How about you, Emily? Feel good about that?
Yep, I think that sounds great. I appreciate everybody's, you know, weighing in and giving opinions on that. It's really helpful.
Great. Good. So with that, are we at a good place to go ahead and conclude this meeting then?
Absolutely.
That's your call.
Well, I wanted to cover all the business first. So sounds, I wanted to make sure to tie off all the loose ends. So I think since the ends have been tied and there's no further matters, I will go ahead and adjourn the meeting. So meeting adjourned.
Thank you
two for joining us by phone.
Yeah, thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good day.
Bye. Have a safe trip, Emily.
You too.